Vasude Vaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Is this loud enough? Yeah. When it comes to Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26, King Puranjana goes to the forest to hunt. Text number 14. Is that right? Antapura Striyo Pritschad Vimana Iva Vedishat Api Va Kushalam Brahmaha. Seshvarayam Yatapura Antapura Striyo Pritschad Vimana Iva Vedishat Apiva Kushalam Ramaha Saishvarinam Yatapura. Okay. Antapura household. Striyaha. Women. Apritschat. He asked. Vimanaha. Being very much anxious. Iva. Like. Vedishat. O King Pachinibahi. Api. Whether. Vaha, your kushalam, good fortune. Ramaha, O you beautiful women. Sa Ishvarinam, with your mistress. Yata, as. Pura, before. At that time, King Puranjana was a little anxious, and he inquired from the household women, "My dear beautiful women, are you and your mistress all very happy like before, or not?" Purport: in this verse, the word Vedishat indicates King Prachinibahi. When a man becomes refreshed by association with devotees and awakes to Krishna consciousness, he consults the activities of his mind, namely thinking, feeling and willing, and decides whether he should return to his material activities or stay steady in spiritual consciousness. The word kushalam refers to that which is auspicious. One can make his home perfectly auspicious when he engages in devotional service to Lord Vishnu. When one is engaged in activities other than Vishnu Bhakti, or in other words, when one is engaged in material activities, he is always filled with anxieties. The same man should consult his mind, its thinking, feeling and willing processes, and decide how these processes should be utilized. If one always thinks of Krishna, feels how to serve him, and rules to execute the order of Krishna, it should be known that he has taken good instruction from his intelligence, which is called the mother. Although the king was refreshed, he nonetheless inquired about his wife. Thus, he was consulted in thinking and willing how he could return to his steady, good consciousness. The mind may suggest that by vishaya bhoga, or sense enjoyment, one can become happy. But when one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, he does not derive happiness from material activities. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 59. Vishaya vinivartante nira harasya dehinaha rasavajam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. The body soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. One cannot be unattached to the sense objects unless he finds better engagement in devotional service. Param drishtva nivartate. One can cease from material activities only when one actually engages in devotional service. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyanamjana Salakaya Chachurunmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahayam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pungun Vandhayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Dinatarinam. Paramananda Madhavam. Paranjana is a little anxious, although in the word for word he is described as being very much anxious. Now, why is he anxious? He's just had his meal and he's relaxing after a hard day's work in the forest hunting, so he should be satisfied, but he's not. Prabhupada explains here that the reason why he's anxious is because he's contemplating material activities, and know, but the underlying theme, I guess, in all the Vedic literature is that real satisfaction of the self doesn't come from engaging the material senses with the material objects of the senses. You know, there is a certain degree of pleasure derived from that engagement. There's a certain degree of pleasure, but it's always followed by a concomitant amount of distress. There's a nature of material existence. What is it? Yehi samspa saja bodha dukkha yamaya evite. What's the next line? Adyantavanta kuntaya na te shu ramate buddha. Right? One who's intelligent. Because, you know, you get some money. And so how do you feel when you get some money? How do you feel? Happy. Happy. And you put it in the bank. Right? But then what happens? The rent comes out. Right? The electricity bill comes out. The gas bill comes out. And so the amount that you got is decreased. And so how do you feel when the amount goes down?
Exactly.
Yeah. You don't like it. Right? So, you know, you get money, your money is taken away. It's inevitable. So there's a, you know, there's the happiness and the distress. The happiness is also the source of, or the those activities or those actions that produce the happiness also are a source of distress. And you know, even one person's happiness is somebody else's distress. Right? At Diwali time, everybody's happy, right? And they're eating sweets. Huh? But then what happens when you eat too many sweets? You get a toothache, right? And so you're suffering the distress. But who's happy? The dentist. He's happy. Come on. All aching teeth, come here. Right? So, happiness and distress is the nature of material existence. And the material existence is always changing. And so therefore Krishna recommends tolerance. And a proper understanding of the fact that material happiness doesn't always guarantee permanent satisfaction. And there's a good reason for that, because material activities, you may get some enjoyment, but does that really satisfy? Are we satisfied by that? And the acharyas give the example that trying to become happy or trying to become satisfied by providing more and more sense gratification for the mind and the senses is like pouring ghee into a fire. When you put ghee into a fire, what happens? The fire just gets more and more. Burns more and more. So, you know, the notion or the idea, and you know, this is what we're all sold on, marketing, modern marketing, depends on this, on the acceptance of this principle that the more sense gratification you have, the happier you'll be. Right? But this is false. You know, it's like the gambling industry, you know, as if they're doing any work, right? They call it the racing industry. That's to give it some sort of air of respectability. But, you know, they say, come and have fun. Come and enjoy at our casino. I drove under the, you know, went on Kingsway and I said, there's a sign there, come and have a bit of fun. And I think, who has fun having their money taken away from them? Right? Who has fun having their money stolen from them, basically? But this is what they're offering. Come and have some fun. But in reality, they're just taking your money. Right? So what kind of fun is that? So it's a false hypothesis, you know, that you can go and gamble, have fun, and be happy. It's ridiculous. Nobody's happy having their money stolen from them. Huh? Well, that's what's happening. Right? Come on, you win. No, nobody wins. There was a song when I was a teenager, it was called Everyone's a Winner. Right? Everyone's a winner. But actually, it's false. Everyone's a loser. Everyone's a loser, except for the people who own the casino. Right? That's what they say, come on, have fun, you win. But they're the ones who are having fun. They're the ones who are taking people's money. Right? So this idea, it's a materialistic notion that, you know, that material life is meant for enjoyment. The Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, material life, or any kind of existence in the material world, is, yes, there will be some pleasure, but there will also be some, there'll be some gain, there'll be some loss. There'll be some happiness, there'll be some distress. Matraspasastakunteya sitosna sukha dukkataha. Right, so there's winter and summer seasons, hot and cold, pleasure and pain. And so one has to tolerate the coming and going of these things. And within that tolerance, and within, instead of pursuing, and so this is where the devotees come in, with the proper understanding of how things actually are. That the real purpose of existence is not to pursue material sense gratification in the hope that one will become happy. Right? It's flickering. It doesn't last. And it's the source of distress. Why Prabhupada says that, you know, the happiness that the living entity, I mentioned this the other day, the happiness that the living entity experiences in the pursuit of material sense gratification is actually the enemy of the spirit soul. And the real happiness and real satisfaction comes from a proper understanding of one's identity, what our relationship is with Krishna, and how we should act in that relationship, because that's our eternal position. The pursuit of pleasure in the material world is just, it's flickering, it's temporary, coming and going. And so there's no real long-term pleasure in pursuing that. Whereas if one tolerates the coming and goings of material existence and uses one's time productively in pursuing a proper understanding of our true identity, real satisfaction and happiness comes from that. Right? Connecting with ourselves, you know, knowing who we are. Knowing where we are, who we are, and where we should be going. And you know, material success, happiness and distress will come in any case. So we had a very interesting process. Early in the morning, we rise early, you know, when most people want to sleep. They think we're crazy. What are these people doing getting up so early? They're crazy. It's a good time to sleep. Stay in bed. So the activities of the devotees are like bewildering to the materialists. But there's a purpose. Rise early and engage in one's bhajan and sadhana, so that then one has a clear understanding of one's actual identity, one's spiritual identity. And then you've got the rest of the day to pursue your material activities or, you know, your dharma, right? It's still religious. And it's still spiritually focused. But one pursues one's occupational duties in the daytime with a proper basis, or with a proper understanding of one's identity. And then, you know, your career will progress. Right? Life will go on. But with a proper understanding of why you're doing things. And you know, with a proper understanding that, yes, I'm going to work, I'll get some benefits from that, but there'll also be problems, issues, challenges, you know, and life is not going to be just a bed of roses. So, interesting what Prabhupada says here. When a man becomes refreshed by association with devotees, and awakes to Krishna consciousness, he consults the activities of his mind. Right? That's very interesting. Usually we're told to, you know, not trust the mind. Don't trust the mind. Right? Or be careful with the mind. But here Prabhupada's saying, we consult the activities of the mind. Thinking, feeling and willing. Right? And decides whether he should return to his material activities or stay steady in spiritual consciousness. Right? And then Prabhupada mentions kushalam means auspicious. Right? That's what koshal means, auspicious. Right. So, the activities of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. Right? So, I guess, and then Prabhupada does mention the intelligence here. So, Prabhupada says here, a sane man should consult his mind, its thinking, feeling, and willing processes, and decide how these processes should be utilized. And Prabhupada gives a hint further on. Although the king was refreshed, he nonetheless inquired about his wife, which indicates he was considering sense gratification. Right? It's mentioned previously. He was thinking of sense gratification. But then, consulting the mind and the thinking, feeling and willing, he has to make a decision. Will I pursue sense gratification or will I stay fixed in my bhajan? Effectively, right? And Prabhupada gives the key here. In order to be successful in doing that, one has to think of Krishna all the time. Right? And which is what Krishna wrote, manmana bhavamad bhakto. Right? Think of me, right? Become my devotee. And Prabhupada mentions it here. One should always think of Krishna, feel how to serve him. Feel how to serve him. How do you do that? What's that? Okay, yeah, thinking. That's the thinking part. But how do you feel? How do you feel how to serve Krishna?
By serving,
yeah. You do it. But how do you feel? How do you feel? Yeah. But how do you feel when you're chanting? You feel grateful. Yeah, maybe. Sure. What? How do you feel? When you're serving Krishna, how do you feel? Krishna, how do you feel?
Happy.
How do you feel? Sukadev, how do you feel? Interesting, isn't it, what Prabhupada says? How to feel how to serve him. And wills to execute the order of Krishna. And then there's this very interesting statement here. I haven't studied this. I'd need to nut it out. But it should be known that he has taken good instruction from his intelligence. Right? This is what informs one's thinking, feeling and willing. You've got to consult the intelligence. Otherwise, if the intelligence is contaminated by calm, lust, then you'll be thinking about what? Sense gratification, right? In all of its different forms. But with good intelligence, purified intelligence, one will think, I'm not this body. One will meditate on, I'm a servant of Krishna, and so therefore let me do service. But here it's interesting. It should be known that he has taken good instructions from his intelligence, which is called the mother. Right? That is pretty far out. I need to look at this story a little bit closer to see why the intelligence is called the mother. Huh? Of course, your mother's always thinking of your best wishes, right? Your mother always wants to look after you and protect you and give you good advice, usually. Right? But here, very interesting. One always thinks of Krishna, feels how to serve him. And you know, everything that we do should be predicated or should begin with this mood of offering. Manmana bhavamad bhakto. Become my devotee. And this is how a devotee acts. He feels his devotional service. He experiences it. It's an absorption. It's a participation. It's an activity where one experiences emotional exchanges between
himself or herself and Krishna, and emotional exchanges between the devotees and each other. Right? There's a feeling. It's like when you're serving prasadam or you're cooking prasadam, then you serve prasadam and then you give it to the devotees and you see how happy the devotees are, then you feel happy. Right? It's a real feeling. It's a feeling. It's pleasure. You know, I remember I'm going to criticize somebody here, but I think it's, you won't know anyway who it is. But it's an example. When I first started coming to the temple, I found out that the temple president needed a desk, right? Didn't have a desk. So I thought, okay, I'll buy a desk. Which I did. Nice desk. Well, I thought it was nice anyway. And then half an hour later, I saw a devotee with a saw chopping off the legs of the desk. Well, what are you doing? I just bought that. And then I discovered that devotees, where they had a desk, they sat on the floor. And so if I'd known that, I could have cut. I was upset. I was just disappointed. And the temple president didn't say thank you to me. Huh? And I was hurt. A sentimental young bhakta. Huh? But, you know, if you do something for somebody, you like to get some reciprocation. Right? But we are persons. We're persons. And persons have, what do persons have?
Egos.
Well, they have senses. They have feelings. We have feelings. You know, we're not just, you know, yogis that's, you know, just kind of impersonal. We're personalists. And persons have feelings. They have senses, they have feelings. And so, you know, in the performance of our bhakti or in the performance of our bhajan, we like to serve Krishna and we like to serve the devotees. We also appreciate reciprocation. If you get no reciprocation, then what happens? Huh? Yeah, you don't want to do it. Stuff you guys. Chop the leg off my desk. Didn't say thank you. Huh? Didn't appreciate what I did. And I was, you know, a very young devotee. I thought, whoa, you know, because I probably spent $50 or maybe more, you know, which in 1978 was a lot of money. Huh? And it wasn't that I was very wealthy. So, feeling. We have feelings and we like to, you know, it's just like when you do aarti and you're offering things to Krishna. There's a feeling, there's a mood of surrender. There's a mood of sacrifice. There's a mood of giving. Right? These are feelings. So in Krishna consciousness there is emotion, movement of the heart, movement of the mind, movement of the senses, but that feeling of giving, which is part of sacrifice, right? Part of jagya. Mind you, the interesting thing is that actually it doesn't belong to us anyway. Right? But it reminds us that everything ultimately belongs to Krishna. My existence, my identity, my skills and talents, all of these things actually are given to me by Krishna. And so everything that I do should be in appreciation and in understanding of that. And that the thinking, you know, the thinking should be, yes, this belongs to Krishna. Or, as I mentioned the other day, idam Krishnaya, idam nama ma. This is for Krishna, it's not for me. And you know, that's the beginning of bhakti, is to offer everything to the Lord. When we start, before we do anything, we should be offering it to Krishna. Our tendency is to do it, and then afterwards we say, oh, okay, I'll give this to you, Krishna. Right? But for a devotee who's thinking and feeling and willing to make advancement in devotional service, and who wants that reciprocation from Krishna, then we have to start thinking in ways that are not selfish. Because that selfishness is, you know, always thinking of, what is it? WIIFM. Have you heard of that? That radio station? What's in it for me? Yeah, it's the radio station that we're most tuned into. What's in it for me? But, you know, if we're thinking like that, and you know, I mentioned this the other day, yesterday to Mama Ohana, you know, that kind of mentality, what's in it for me, breeds shortcut-itis, right? And Mamahan, you've heard of tonsillitis, right? Or bursitis. Itis means a disease. Right? Tonsillitis means tonsils with a disease. So shortcut itis is a disease that we get when we stop thinking about Krishna and we start thinking about ourselves. We have to be careful of that, because it's a disease that's everywhere, especially amongst the non-devotees. The devotees are always thinking, how can I put myself out to serve Krishna and serve the devotees? That's the proper mood, meant this thinking, feeling and willing. Not, how can I do this the quickest, the shortest, the cheapest, the nastiest way? And just get it out of the way. Because, you know, in that then there's no offering to Krishna. Huh? It's just rush, 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 and let me get out of here. Isn't it? Isn't it? I think about it, huh? Let's just rush it through. Ah. Damn it, I've got to do this offering. Huh? Oh no, they got me on the roster. Let me just throw it all together, run off, and then leave it to somebody else to finish off. Right? What kind of a mentality is that? What kind of a mentality is it? Is that shortcut-itis or what? Hey? What is it? It's not devotional service. It's not service to the devotees. It's not service to Krishna. We've got to recognize that. See, you know, we individually will be measured by how we behave as a community also. Right? So some of these things, you know, they have to be called out for what they are and why it's dangerous. And it's especially as our community grows and we have more and more and more devotees who haven't had a lot of training, then, you know, we get them to do services, but they just rush it. They just get it out of the way as quickly as possible. They don't do a good job. And that's not what bhakti is all about. It means that we're not training people properly. And of course, that's, you know, that takes time, effort. Got to put yourself out. But it fits in here with Prabhupada saying, you know, a devotee considers using the thinking, feeling and willing processes of the mind with the assistance of the intelligence, right, which is called the mother, right, and who has the best interests of, has our best interests at heart. Do we slip back into materialistic thinking? Because that's what's happening here with Paranjana. He's tired, come home, had something to eat, he's resting, and so what is he thinking? Oh, how can I enjoy with my wife, right? And what does that cause him? What does it cause him? Anxiety, right? So material activities cause us anxiety. So, you know, what happens when you cut corners, you do a service, but you don't do it properly? How do you feel afterwards? Yes. You feel like unsatisfied. But if you put yourself out, you add that extra bit of emotion to what you're doing, you know, it might be some decoration or some, you know, just making sure that everything in the offering, everything that one does is, it looks, it's presentable. You're proud of your offering to Krishna. Because we shouldn't be proud of anything, because ultimately it comes from Krishna. But, you know, there's some satisfaction, there's deep satisfaction derived from make an offering that's complete and full. So, you know, the offering's done, the utensils and the area in which you've created the offering is cleaned and everything's tidy and neatly put away. Then you walk away from doing that offering fully satisfied. It's Purnam, right? Purnam. It's complete. But if it's shortcut, leave a mess, you know, oh, couldn't be bothered, what is that? That's what's the opposite of Purnam? Apurnam. Right? Apurnam. And that's not satisfying. Like, there's no thing, you know, there's, so, you know, we're not robots. We're not robots. We're persons. And bhakti requires, you know, the giving of everything to Krishna. Then Krishna will start to reciprocate with us. Like Prabhupada says here. Very interesting. One can cease from material activities only when one actually engages in devotional service, right? So we might go through the motions of doing our service, but if we're not putting ourselves into it, then what is it? It's just mechanical. Or even it's not even, it's just cut a corner. Showbottle. Yes, heaven forbid. Right? Show bottle. Thus he was consulting, thinking and willing, how he could return to his steady good consciousness. Because, you know, the good consciousness of Krishna consciousness is very, it's the most satisfying thing. Huh? Anandam buddhivadanam pratipadam punam ritasvardanam. Right? The performance of the Sankirtan movement, there's, it's the nectar for which we're all, what is it? It's the life of transcendental knowledge, is that nectar or that feeling of satisfaction that one gets when one knows that one's actually serving Krishna. Even if there's some difficulty. That difficulty is embraced by the devotees as their source of ecstasy. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, let me experience more anxiety for Krishna. If serving Krishna and making Krishna happy means anxiety, bring it on. Right? Give me more, give me more, give me more. Right? More anxiety for Krishna, the better. When we start thinking, oh, nah, I'm not going to do that. Too much trouble. Krishna notices that. Oh, okay, all right. Well, what do you... You want me to reciprocate with you, but you not couldn't care less about me. The feel, you know, the feelings. And Krishna has feelings too. We think, ah, Krishna, he's not looking after me. Why should I look after him? Huh? we have to put ourselves out. Then Krishna will put... He'll look after us. So very interesting here. Paranjana was feeling anxiety because of his material mentality. We'll feel anxiety because we think, here's the problem, we think, oh, I'm such a great devotee. But actually we're contaminated by material motivations. And so when we perform our service and we think, like Chandni said, you know, I think I'm doing such a wonderful thing, but when I really look at it, it's not so good. And we're thinking, hey, Krishna, I'm doing all of this service for you, but why aren't I feeling blissful? Right? Can't be me. It must be you. Right? You know, what am I doing in the material world, in any case? How come I'm your pure devotee, I'm stuck in the material world? This cannot be right. Something's gone wrong here. Yeah, that's right. After all I've done for you, and I'm still stuck here in the material world. And that's why, you know, devotional service, there's a lot of introspection has to go on. There has to be a lot of internalization. This is the feeling. The feeling. Especially when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we have to feel. Rupa Goswami warns us, actually. He says, you know, we are contaminated by avidya, ignorance. And we're ignorant of our own position. And this is why staying in the association of the devotees is so important, why engaging in devotional service is so important, because it's the only way we're going to get rid of this ignorance of who we really are and where we're really at. Madhyam Bhakta starts to realize, ooh, I thought I was a pure devotee, but I just discovered I've got a few things here that might indicate otherwise. Right? We're not rolling around on the floor in ecstasy with tears pouring out of our eyes. No? Like Lord Chaitanya. And even Lord Chaitanya was celebrated by the devotees and praised by the devotees as being so, you know, perfect. But what did he say? Nah, my tears are all just a display. It's just a show. So that internal, using the mind, thinking, feeling, willing, even feeling bad. You know, we want to feel in ecstasy all of the time. Right? Anandam buddhivardhanam. I should be absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy. But I'm not. Okay, why not? Why not? Why? You're chanting Hare Krishna, but all you're doing is thinking about what's in it for me, right? No, not more service. Doesn't it ever stop? When am I going to experience the bliss of bhakti? Well, you know, those challenges, that anxiety, that stress even that we experience in the pursuit of bhakti is actually, it's also part of the process. And it doesn't mean, you know, that we have to flagellate ourselves, you know, torture ourselves, punish ourselves. Just performing our service, there'll be enough of that. It'll come automatically. We don't have to worry about it. But, you know, it's... you know, the mind may suggest, Prabhupada says here, that by sense gratification we can become happy. But he says there, when we become advanced, we don't look for happiness in material activities. We look for happiness in our devotional service and embrace it, even the difficult parts. That's a measure of our devotion. And when we're giving the most of everything that we have, then Krishna will reciprocate with us full-heartedly. When we give Krishna ourselves, thinking, feeling and willing for Krishna, then he will give himself to us. In fact, he's always prepared to reciprocate. And then when there's that reciprocation, we experience the param drishtva that Prabhupada mentions at the end of the purport. When Krishna is reciprocating with us, in other words, when we're giving everything to him, which is the measure of bhakti, right? Atmanivedana, then Krishna will give us the taste of bhakti. We'll relish it. And we'll be happy and satisfied. Yet there's no more satisfaction, there's no higher satisfaction achievable in material existence than that which is derived from the performance of bhakti. Rupa Goswami tells us that, you know, the pleasure derived from liberation is just a speck of the experience that one can derive from the performance of pure devotional service. This is what this is all about. It's all about actually rendering pure service. Anya vilasita sunyam jnana kama jnavritam. Not covered by a desire for personal benefit or intellectual knowledge, intellectual benefit or knowledge derived from the performance of bhakti, no consideration of it. Because done purely, those things will automatically come. We don't have to think about what we'll get if we're serving Krishna. We'll automatically be given that higher taste, param drishtva. And then that keeps us fixed. It's a bit of a catch-22. We've got to render service with purity and with the right intent. And if we don't, then we'll always be plagued by the anxieties of material existence, because those material motivations will always try to crowd out the bhakti. And why Prabhupada recommends, you know, he gives the example of the glass, right? And why we have a morning program is you fill it up fully with Krishna consciousness, and it's like a glass of milk, right? When the glass of milk is full and you try to pour some ink on top, what happens? The ink just goes over the side. If you fill the glass up only half with milk and you pour the ink in, then what do you get? Right? Grey. So very interesting. What's actually recommended for it. And it's a challenge, there's no doubt about it. It's a challenge. We're born into conditional existence, and we've been like this for uncountable lifetimes, and so there's that tendency to fall back to what's in it for me. Even in the performance of bhakti. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur warns us that there are anadas that arise only as a result of the performance of bhakti. No? That we have to be vigilant for or about. Keep an eye out. What to speak of our past, you know, laziness. There's even anadas that can arise as a consequence of, you know, the performance of bhakti. So, how to get the higher taste and why we need to stay in the association of the devotees. Why we need to stay in that sangha. We're influenced and pushed, if you like, by the mode of passion, especially in Kali Yuga. And that degrades very quickly into ignorance. And so we will act. We must act. We can't not act. But in the association of the devotees, we're made aware of our choices. And we're actually given, by that association, opportunity to make the right choice. In bad association, of which there's plenty, there's an abundance in this day and age, we'll be influenced to make the wrong decisions, even as a devotee. But if one's able to stay in the association of the devotees and take advantage of that association and understand what the thought processes of a devotee are, how a devotee feels, what does a devotee want? This is the willing. And we get that from association. What is it? Sangat sanjayate karma. We reflect the mood, the desires, the actions of those who we associate with, right? So, you know, associate with the drunks in the park, what will you become? A drunk. Right? Associate with the devotees, you'll become a devotee. Huh? You pick up the mood, the meditation, the feelings of a devotee, the desires of a devotee. And that's what's going on in the mind. That's our mental landscape that we have to cultivate. And you know why we have to pull out the weeds, you know, it's gardening, as is suggested by Lord Chaitanya. And so, you know, anattas are like weeds, we've got to pull them out. Avoid bad association, because that association will just plant a whole bunch of weeds. We think it's bhakti, it's the bhakti lata beach, but then we discover, ooh, hang on a second, this is not. So it's a cultivation. It's actually fairly hard work in one sense. But you know, it's better to come home after a day's work of serving Krishna and be fully satisfied than a day's work or a part day's work of serving Krishna and a bit of Maya and be in anxiety. Right? Be in anxiety. That's what we choose. When we choose material activities by habit or by design or pushed by lust or whatever, we'll be unhappy. But if we throw ourselves into devotional service and serve Krishna with full determination and faith, then at the end of the day, how do you feel? Happy. Yeah, ecstatic. Not happy, ecstatic. You go to sleep and what do you dream about? Krishna, the devotees, all sorts of things. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions? Mahatmaji.
Yes, one comment. I just heard Rupa Goswami said, Anyavilasa Shunyam. We should have no other desire other than Anyavilasa.
Yes.
And like King Amrish is the best example I can think of.
Amrish Maharaj. Yeah. Yep. And what's the first thing that he did when he went to the temple? Karo Harer Mandira Majanadi Shu. He cleaned it. Rather than walk down to the kitchen and had a look to see what's on the offering, what he's going to have for breakfast. Okay. Yes.
So, are these emotions something that we should try to like cultivate, or does it just come naturally as a process of performing bhakti?
What do you think?
Me personally, I feel like we should have the desire to have these emotions in Krishna and in one sense try to cultivate them other than just mindlessly performing bhakti.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, you might just do things in a way that's not, you know, that's cold and detached. So this is the thing. We think emotional exchanges, it's material. Right? But actually the emotional exchanges are part of bhakti. And so, yes, some cultivation probably in order. Or we look at what Prabhupada did. We look at the mood of the gopis and the gopas in Vrindavan. We get our cues from other devotees on how, you know, we should be emotionally engaged and emotionally involved in what we do for Krishna. So that may require, it may come naturally, it will come naturally, but at the same time also it can be cultivated. So, certainly both, I would suggest. Of course, we shouldn't be so, you know, like the Shaki Beckys, they dress up like peacocks or dress up like gopis, and they think, you know, I'm now going to do service like a peacock and just make a show of it, right? So that cultivation of emotional the bhakti, the offering and the mood has to be done in accordance with the guidelines that are given by the previous acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada, and by the example of the devotees. So it can't be, it's something that has to be followed but not imitated. How's that sound? Yeah. We've got to understand the rasasa or the bhakti-sa, the essence of what's being done, and do that ourselves. And it can be very, you know, basic things. Like, you know, when you finish your offering, clean the kitchen. Huh? That's a good example. When you finish for the day, make sure that everything's clean and tidy. Ooh, I should. My room looks terrible. I should go home and clean my room now. Now I think about it. My office is okay. But my office at home is a mess. So, you know, and then, see, that is a symptom of the mode of goodness. Keeping things clean, tidy, punctual is basic stuff for us. But then when everything, you know, have you noticed when you get in a Sankirtan car and it's dirty, you know, like the Volkswagen, somebody had been eating something on it, looked like multiple meals, multiple meals. And I think it was Param Brahma was going to drop me off somewhere. And, you know, I opened up the door and then I saw the seat and I thought, you don't expect me to sit on that, do you? Disgusting. So I told him, clean, you know, we've got to clean it. Take it to the car wash, clean it. Right? Then the next day or the day after, I got another lift. I think I went and had a look at the van. I said, look at the van, it's clean. So you actually feel like sitting on the seat. Right? Have you had that experience? If you haven't, go and have a look at the Volkswagen. It's probably back to what it was. Dirty. So, you know, for us, getting the mood can be just as simple as keeping things clean, keeping things tidy, keeping your room and the equipment that you use fit for purpose, right? Which means after you've used it, this is why we have a kitchen clean-up, right? Because what happens when the morning cooks come into the kitchen and the evening cooks didn't clean? What happens? What does the morning cook say? Jai Prabhu, you've given me a great opportunity to do some more service. No, they don't. They're on a schedule. They've got to get their offering done on time, especially Bhakti Man or Brajabasi, cooking for Crossways. Right, you know, serious stuff. 300 or 400 people a day we're feeding. You've got to be there on time, right? And the place is a mess. It disturbs the... Actually, it's very interesting. It's the disturbed mind of the cook the night before who didn't do the service properly disturbs the mind of the devotee who's got to do his service the next day. This is what happens. So this is a mood, right? Proper mood. We don't think about it enough, I don't think.
Emotional content.
Yeah, emotional content. So you show your appreciation for your service and for Krishna by making sure that when you finish, everything's pucker. Right? So when Bhakti Man comes in the morning and he's got to do his offering, he goes, Jai, peace, man. Right? Om Shanti. It's interesting. Interesting. See, we don't meditate on what impact my behavior will have on the next person. So there's a mood to cultivate, right? Keep it clean. Keep it clean. Fit for purpose. This is good management. This all relates to deity worship. Good management is actually deity worship. And that means punctuality and cleanliness. And so keeping your office space, I'm preaching to myself now, you know, when you go home at night, it's clean. So when you come in the morning, instead of having I've got to go home to my office now and clean up the mess from last night. Messy thinking. Huh? So, and I remember I had a friend who I haven't seen for a long time, but He had a computer business. He was very good at it. And I used to see him Saturday mornings. He'd be in his office and he'd have the feather duster, the the cloths and everything, and we'd just clean his office and clean the desk. There was nothing on the desk. Nothing. And I realized this is why he's so successful, is because he keeps everything clean, and then so when he comes into the office, he can think straight. Huh? Think straight.
There's an old saying, the state of a man's bed is the state of a man's head.
His bed. I made my bed this morning. And I made sure that it was even. On beds should not be too complicated. My wife likes to have complicated beds. But I like it just a doona on top, and then when you get out of bed, it's not too difficult to make sure that both sides are equal. Yeah, keep it simple. Beds are a hassle. But it's a measure of your tidiness and keeping things organized, keeping things focused, yeah. Does that make sense? It can be just simple things like keeping things clean. Is the right mood? I go to my friend's places sometimes, I'm having a shower and there's no scrubbing brush. And I think, what? Where's the scrubbing brush? I can't have a shower. I learnt this from Korma. I can't have a shower without scrubbing my fingernails. I feel dirty if I haven't scrubbed them. You feel like that? Huh? There's a mood. I learnt that from Korma. And I used to see, because Korma couldn't, he's very short-sighted, or his eyesight's very poor, and I remember him seeing the butt, and he'd always be looking at his head. But that's a mood. Prabhupada mentioned it actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So say for example a devotee is cleaning the prasadam.
Yes.
And so in that seva, in doing that service, it's nice you can be able to think about Krishna. I mean you can be able to think about,
let's just get it clean. Let's just get it clean first, that'd be good.
Right. But then like how do you feel Krishna?
Well, how do you feel it? When you're finished, you have a sense of satisfaction that I did a good job. Right? That's how I feel.
I mean, you could think like, oh, Krishna would be big, but how do you feel with Krishna?
Well, try this. Just half do it. Just half do the job. Leave half dirty and see how you feel. Huh? Just try that. And then do it properly and then see how you feel. Which is better? Yeah, it's simple. It's simple. I did a good job. I feel happy.
Yeah, this feeling, that's you feeling
pleased by. But it's okay. It's good enough. That's one way of doing it. In this context, that the temple commander has put me on the roster. He's performing that service under the auspices of the temple president. The temple president is serving Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada's serving Krishna, and so therefore I'm connected. can be that simple. Right?
Therefore, the same Prabhupada states that devotional service is not different from the kingdom of God.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, in the beginning stages, our feelings may not be so developed, right? But as we mature as devotees, then we'll feel more. More will be revealed to us. And so our feelings of bhakti, if you like, will be focused more directly on Krishna and Krishna's associates. We'll feel in the course of our devotional service that connection with Krishna and our companionship or our association with the advanced devotees, with the residents of Vrindavan, ideally. So our meditation will deepen and broaden such that we'll remember the eternal associates of Krishna, and that we're performing our service in their association. This is how it's described by Prabhupada in the Upadeshamrita, especially in the Nectar of Instruction. So in the beginning we may be just, you know, going through the motions and more of an external practice, but as we become more experienced and our hearts become cleansed and more purified, we'll be able to see the depth of the relationship with Krishna and the relationship with his eternal associates. And that meditation will broaden and expand on the different types of service that the residents of Vrindavan are rendering to Krishna, and that our service, whatever it happens to be, is part of that practice. Right? There you go. So when we're asking the neighbours for flowers, or even stealing flowers for Krishna, we're associating with the gopis in Vrindavan. Or we're going to the market to buy the flowers. Huh? There are flower sellers in Vrindavan. Okay, let's finish here. Gwantarashimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.